Rick Moore is not here. This is Sean McCord. Actually, Rick Moore is here. He's standing a few feet away, grinning at me. This is Sean McCord stepping in for our annual Oscar show. Tonight is the night of the Academy Awards on ABC. And so we always do a special show once a year to have people come in and talk about the Oscars and their choices and their look at the movie world in general. And we're going to do a little mic check here. Let's start on Radio Right with Corey. Corey, you just want to lean in and say howdy?
Howdy.
Thank you. That's Corey Capron, local film buff and writer and blogger. And first time around at this show. Thanks for being here, Corey.
Thanks for having me.
And next to him is Will Smith. Will Smith, you are the producer of WNRN's 91 Seconds on Film.
Good morning.
Good morning.
That's right.
Yes. Not that Will Smith.
I have a flight later.
Okay, and we just heard from Wes Harris. Wes Harris, the associate programmer at the Virginia Film Festival. Actually, Wes, give us your full title at the.
My name is Wesley Harris. I'm the associate programmer and production coordinator at the festival.
Excellent. And right in front of him, joining us at the top of the show, is Jody Kilbasa, director of the film festival. Jody.
Good morning, everyone.
Okay, now why did I not hear that? Oh, because you're on a different mic. I'll figure out which mic that is in just a second, Jody.
All right.
Let's try that again.
Good morning.
That didn't work. Here we go. Try it again, Jody.
Good morning, Sean.
There we go. All right, thank you. I didn't realize you were on a different mic there. Okay, this is the Wake Up Call on WNRN. You will 91.9. Also, good morning to Lynchburg's 89.9. Today's programming on WNRN is brought to you by Blue Ridge Graphics, Meade Avenue at East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics at 434-296-9746 and at brgtshirts.com. At the top of the hour, let's talk about tonight's event. And, Jody, this is why particularly why I brought you in. Particularly pleased to have you here. Oscar Night America, this is, the fourth year in a row? Third or fourth year in a row that the Virginia Film Festival has been doing this at the Paramount?
Actually, it's our third year.
Our third year, okay.
Yeah, and we are one of 49 charities officially sanctioned by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences to present an Oscar Night America. And this year it benefits the 25th anniversary of the Virginia Film Festival. And it's this evening at 7 p.m. at the Paramount Theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great event. Again, all the proceeds are to benefit our 25th anniversary year of the Virginia Film Festival. We've got about over a dozen of Charlottesville's finest restaurants that are participating with food for everybody, some of our best regional vineyards that are pouring wine this evening, of course, soda and popcorn. And what's really pretty nifty is we have, and I'm holding it right here, the official 84th Academy Awards brochure, the very program that is going to be on the seats at the Oscars tonight. And they've shipped about 600 of these to us, and that's all part and parcel of the cost this evening, which is only $45, and we've got a pretty cool silent auction as well with some very nifty memorabilia. I know that Wes is salivating right now behind me because
I'm salivating at the niftiness that we're just putting out this evening.
He wants to bid, I know, on the original pilot script for Breaking Bad that is signed by the cast and the creator.
Six cast members.
That is Bryan Cranston, of course, the star of it, and then Vince Gilligan, who's from Virginia, who actually won an award, a screenwriting award, with the Virginia Film Office that was presented at the Virginia Film Festival years ago and launched his career. He's the creator of Breaking Bad. We have the original pilot script signed by the entire cast.
So if you want to outbid Wes Harris...
We're putting a solid $17 down for it.
So that's 7 o'clock, starting 7 o'clock tonight. The broadcast starts at 8:30, so people show up early. They can hobnob. They can have some film. They can look through this brochure. And our radio audiences can't see it, but I remember these from years past. This is a slick production. This is a nice full-color booklet.
Oh, it's beautiful. They have all the photos of virtually everybody who's nominated, color photos of the films and the stars. It's embossed. It's a collector's item. I mean, these things regularly sell for $25 alone on eBay, and it's all part and parcel of the cost of the event. Unbelievable food with some of Charlottesville's best restaurants and wine, soda, popcorn, this official program, and, of course, the largest high-def screening in the state of Virginia on that beautiful, stunning screen at the Paramount. You actually feel like you're at the Oscars.
Right, and for people who haven't been to the Paramount, God forbid, since it was revived a few years ago, it's a beautiful location. And Charlottesville, people love to dress up. They come in at least, you know, semi-formal, if not formal. You see, you know, women come in their dresses, men come in their nicest suits, and you get to stand around and have great food and pretend you're in Hollywood.
It's fun. We have a red carpet experience. It's hosted by Dan Schutte and Tara Wheeler from Newsplex. We have a lot of local radio personalities that are there interviewing people as they come in on the red carpet. People love that. Every year we have a gentleman who comes dressed and looks like a dead ringer for Jeff Bridges from The Big Lebowski, complete with ratty terry cloth bathrobe and Marlboros. We have a lot of Marilyn.
It was so embarrassing because I wore the same suit last year.
It's fun. It's a really fun event.
And I remember Tara's dress from last year. She looked like an Oscar.
Oh, she's excited about this year's dress, yes.
Yeah. Awesome.
Cool.
All right. Well, let's, Jody, while you're still with us, before we jump into a discussion of this year's nominees and possible winners, I want to talk a little bit about film festivals in general and the part they play in the nomination process. You know, a lot of you can talk more intelligently about this than I can, but I know that a lot of studios want to get their films out into the festival circuit to be seen, even though the Oscar voters, most of them are in the film industry, tend to live in Los Angeles, you know, so they have to have exclusive screenings there. But early buzz can develop when they start releasing films into the festivals. And I know this year, as in previous years, a lot of the nominees this year screened at last year's film festival. Can you talk a little bit about that process from your point of view, and also just in general your feeling of how that works with festivals?
Well, I sure can. You know, it's a cycle and it changes over time. I mean, a few years back, I think that studios were moving away from regional film festivals in terms of premiering these big films that were likely to be Oscar contenders and holding on to them. And, you know, as marketing has gotten more difficult, there's been more challenges out there with Netflix and just, you know, streaming and everything that's going on, they've realized that you know, they can use the festivals as a marketing tool, particularly the regional festivals, to build that kind of buzz and energy and excitement about films. And so, I mean, Black Swan last year was a perfect example that played a lot of the top regional film festivals around the country. And I know that when we opened the Virginia Film Festival last year, or when I say last year, that's almost a year and a half ago now.
Right.
In 2010, there was tremendous energy and excitement wrapped around people seeing that film. And of course, it had premiered in Venice and then had been seen over at Telluride in Toronto. And by the time we screened it, there were probably about another 9 or 10 important regional festivals around the country that were premiering it a few weeks later, maybe a week before, around that time. And just everybody was super excited about it. And I'll never forget the audience that night being so polarized between people that loved the film and hated the film, but everybody wanted to talk about the film. And even people that didn't like the film wanted to go see it again to kind of get a sense of why. And I'll tell you, studios love that. They love that kind of buzz and excitement, bloggers talking about it, people saying, you've got to go see this film. And so they're really starting to use these regional festivals to build that energy and buzz. Certainly they did with The Artist. We were close to getting Shame this year. We didn't get it. I was a little disappointed about that. I know Wes was as well. We'd hope to have that include that in the festival. But, you know, films like The Artist and The Descendants, we need to talk about Kevin, A Dangerous Method, you know, Albert Nobbs, for instance, our centerpiece film that has two of its women nominated for Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress, and Glenn Close and Janet McTeer, all were part of the Virginia Film Festival this year. And they're very smart about positioning these films for marketing purposes now.
And during the 2011 Film Festival last November, the audience picked an audience favorite. And which film was that?
Oh, my goodness.
It was The Artist.
That's what I thought.
Right.
Yeah, it was The Artist. Yes. The Artist, yeah, which is now up for up for Best Picture this year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So, and which was just, I went to that screening, and it absolutely blew me away. So I'm not at all, and I just kept telling everybody, go see this darn thing when it comes around again. So,
but, you know, we had a sleeper in the festival as well, too, in A Better Life. And the lead actor is nominated for Best Actor, Damien Bashir. And Paul Younger-Witt, who is a graduate of the University of Virginia and has been a friend of the festival over the years, brought that in. And, you know, that's one of those films that I don't think a lot of people have seen, but is a wonderful film. And, of course, I've read in a lot of journalists think that you know, he turned in one of the finest performances of the year. So I hope people will check that film out as well. So that's one of the great things about the Virginia Film Festival, is that opportunity to discover films as well, too, besides the more obvious ones like The Artist or The Descendants.
We've been listening to Jody Kielbasa, director of the film festival, who's here for our special Oscar show. And Jody, I know you're not going to be able to stay for the whole show, so I appreciate you taking time at the top of the show. Support today is coming from L. Oppelman's Pawn Shop, serving Lynchburg families for over a century at 909 Main Street. L. Oppelman always has a selection of jewelry, including estate jewelry and handpicked GIA certified diamonds, loose or mounted, plus gold and platinum wedding bands. L. Oppelman has cultured pearls and watches from brands like Rolex, Tags, and Breitling. That's L. Offelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg. You are listening to The Wake Up Call on WNRN in Charlottesville. And let's move out a little bit and talk to some of our other guests today. We have Will Smith. Will, you are the producer of WNRN's 91 Seconds on Film.
That's right. Still getting my feet wet on that one.
Yeah. You've been around for a while.
Remember, I've been around for about 2 years. I recently took the program over about a month and a half ago. Our former friend Tom DuMontier stepped down, and I stepped in to fill those giant shoes.
Right, and Tom has been a frequent guest at this annual show. He wasn't able to join us this year, so I appreciate you coming in.
No, thank you.
Will, before we start getting into specific nominations across discussion, I'm going to ask this of each of the guests. Do you have a particularly favorite film this year that's nominated, whether for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, Best Sound, or whatever? It's the one that kind of leaps out at you.
My top film of last year actually got pretty snubbed this year, and I feel that it got a nomination here and there. I think it actually only got one, but my favorite film last year was Drive, and I think Albert Brooks got snubbed.
Absolutely.
Major for his performance as the mobster, because he blew it out of the park on that one. But I thought Drive was an incredible film, and if you haven't seen it, you should definitely check it out. But don't expect Fast and the Furious.
No. That sounds like a good thing.
Well, exactly. But there was a woman who made some headlines by requesting a refund because she was misled by the trailers.
Ah, so. Very good. Corey.
Hello.
Corey Capron, writer, blogger.
Don't bring up the blog.
Local man about town.
Blackmail territory.
Do you have a favorite film from this last year?
Well, of the nominated films, I'm kind of with him on Drive, actually. That was a big one. Really, though, my favorite film of the year got very snubbed, 50-50.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah,
that's a good one, too.
I was shocked that it wasn't up for original screenplay or even best actor for Joseph Gordon-Levitt. But, yeah, those would be my two favorites.
Won a Spirit Award last night.
Yeah.
Ooh. Excellent. Okay, we're not going to spend the whole time talking about films that didn't get nominated, but Wes, I'm going to give you your swing at the bat.
Yeah, well, as Jody can tell you, I'm usually the contrarian in the room, or at least against kind of the prevailing preference, but I really do think The Artist is that good.
Yeah.
It was one of the two films I actually sat down and watched during the film festival and actually was sort of able to stay awake for during those 18-hour days. And I've gone back and seen it at the Regal downtown since, and I may see it again if they keep playing it. It's just a soul-nourishing movie, and I know I'm sounding amazingly cheesy with this, but I adore the film.
Wait a second, I got to interrupt here. It's not that you wouldn't have watched other films during the film festival since we both programmed that together.
I saw most of the films before the film festival happened. Yeah,
just a point of reference there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, I know Artist has gotten some criticism, not for the film itself, but you know, for people outside of the industry saying, this is typical sort of self-reflective Hollywood, you know, navel-gazing, you know, they're making
we're talking
a film.
About the Oscars, where, keep in mind, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, so. That they're making, you know, that everyone loves a film that's about Hollywood and making films. That criticism aside, I have to agree with you. It was a fantastic film. It does, I mean, the story is simple but sweet. The performances are, you just cannot, the lead actress, including the dog. You're right. You cannot take your eyes off him.
He was the recipient of the Paul d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival, Sean. So I think it's impressive. It's impressive that I mean, not only that it's a silent film, but it's getting so much acclaim. You know, because people have, I mean, these days attention spans are pretty, mm-hmm. pretty short. But I think it's interesting that there are two films nominated this year that have such a grip on film history.
Right.
That,
with
I mean,
Hugo,
Hugo. I wouldn't call it navel gazing. I think it's kind of like going back to their roots of the industry that people aren't really familiar with.
And also, in The Artist, amazing how they made Toronto look so much like Los Angeles in the 1920s. No, that was a joke. It actually was shot in Los Angeles in areas that, and they didn't shoot it on the back lot. They shot it on streets, but, you know, managed, and not through camera trickery, but just mainly through locations and a little bit of set dressing. To really capture that, look and that feel of a town that many of us have thought has been lost to us.
It's more than its gimmick. If silence can be considered a gimmick now, it's more than that. It's not just a silent film for the sake of doing something different. It's just a phenomenal piece of cinema.
And if you think about the uphill battle that he was fighting with that, without the sound.
Not being Mel Brooks.
And people, even now, people still saying, oh, with all the buzz about it, still kind of saying, I don't know if I want to go see that. I don't, you know, there's no sound. What's it going to be
like?
It's
in black and white.
Black and white, exactly. But, you know, I took my kids to it, and they loved it.
Yeah.
Absolutely
loved
it.
Yeah, it's an absolute cross-the-board family film. Today's programming is supported by Dixon Disposal. Dixon can help you protect the earth by utilizing single-stream recycling and the regular pickup service. Dixon Disposal offers weekly leaf removal up to 5 pounds or more. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. For more info, it's DixonDisposal.com or 434-978-2111. All right, let's jump into this. I've been teasing a little bit, but I think it's time to jump in and actually talk about the specific nominees. And let's borrow a trick from the Oscar broadcast and start with supporting actress and work our way up. Can I get a volunteer to read who the supporting actresses are? Wes, why don't you go ahead?
We've got Berenice Bejo in The Artist, Jessica Chastain in The Help, Melissa McCarthy in Bridesmaids, Janet McTeer in Albert Nobbs, and Octavia Spencer in The Help.
Okay, Wes, you've got the microphone. Your thoughts on these nominations?
Well, I don't want to belabor the point of how much I think of The Artist. Berenice Bejo, if she wins it, it's much deserved. That being said, I would get a huge kick out of Melissa McCarthy winning for Bridesmaids.
that would be awesome.
Taking the thing, or I'm sorry, Suki. We're not talking about True Blood. We're talking about Gilmore Girls. If she took that home, I would be amazingly happy. On the same kind of point, Janet McTeer would be really fun to see take it home.
Jody.
Looking at this list, I think that probably Octavia Spencer potentially is going to take it home. I also think that, again, I agree with Wes. I'd love to see Janet McTeer. It's sentimental for me. That was our centerpiece film on Saturday night. We have a UVA alum and Julie Lynn, who's on our advisory board and a longtime friend of the festival, produced that film. But Berenice would be a lovely, is both a lovely nominee and would be a lovely winner as well, too.
Many years ago when I lived in L.A., I would participate in an annual Oscar pool. And I never won because I always got hung up on a couple of sentimental favorites. And the person who won every year, Jody, I think you know him. His name is Jeff. He used to be the programmer at the Sundance Film Festival. I won't use last names here, but he every year he knocked the thing out of the park and he won because he had a talent for picking who was actually going to win, not necessarily based on who was the best performance or who was a sentimental favorite, but who the Academy liked. So I may ask you, if you want to give two answers, who you would like to see and who you think probably will win, by all means, go ahead. Go ahead, Will. Jump in on Best Supporting Actress.
Honestly, I'm with Jody on this one. Probably Octavia Spencer. She did win the SAG Award for it, and that's usually a pretty big indicator. But I wouldn't. I mean, if it's not going to be her, it's probably going to be Bernice Bejo for the artist. But I would again, like Wes, I would love to see Melissa McCarthy take this one away because I don't know.
She's going to give a great speech.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, she's
going to bring
hilarious.
The house down.
She's really funny. Puppies out on stage.
She better. But I think Bridesmaids is one of those movies. Like, there's usually one decent outright comedy a year, and that was it last year.
Right.
Otherwise, you're dealing with Sandler and his company. But Bridesmaids. There's my piece.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of echo everyone here, more or less, with Octavia. Also because Bernice has kind of a tough job in that. Throughout the artist, she is largely kind of the object, the it girl. But to her credit, she nailed a lot of those nuances of silent actors from that period. You know, I'm thinking of these characters like Lulu and the way they could just look at you and just charm you to death. So, I mean, those are the two to win it.
Gentlemen, take a breather. The markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley is mostly sunny today with a high 45 to 50. Clear tonight with a low 25 to 30, then mostly sunny tomorrow. The high of 60 to 65, upper 50s in the valley. Right now in the valley it's 34, 36 in Lynchburg, 46 and partly cloudy in Richmond, and in Charlottesville it's 39 degrees.
A refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Thank you. Rick Moore is standing here in the studio behind me, making sure I push all the right buttons, a job that sometimes I have to perform when he's at the microphone. We are here with Jody Kielbasa. Jody, you're going to be with us for a few minutes more, director of the Virginia Film Festival. Wes Harris, associate programmer at the Virginia Film Festival. Will Smith. New producer of WNRN's 91 Seconds on Film, and Corey Capron, Guy. And let's move on to, and this is our annual Oscar show for anyone who's coming in late. Let's move on to, since we just did supporting actress, let's move on to supporting actor. Corey, you want to read the list for us of who are the nominees this year?
Certainly.
Wish I had a drum roll to accompany this.
Kenneth Branagh for My Week with Marilyn, Jonah Hill in Moneyball, Nick Nolte in Warrior, Christopher Plummer in Beginners, Max von Sydow in Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Thank you very much. And, Corey, do you have either a sentimental favorite or who you think is actually going to win this year?
Well, I mean, I would have to say that the two who are going to be neck and neck for this are going to be Nick Nolte and Christopher Plummer.
Yeah.
Nick Nolte's kind of in the Mickey Rourke position where he's taking a film that's allowing him to use the demons he's had to fight with to kind of inform his performance. And I thought Warrior was not a very well-written film, but the beauty of it was the actors did that rare thing where they were able to actually out-act the script. I mean, it's terribly gimmicky, but you have Tom Hardy and Nick Nolte just blowing you away.
I have a feeling a lot of movies are trying to do that these days.
Yeah. No, I mean, and with Nick Nolte in that, just the nuances of the alcoholism, the slight look at the bottle that was just a nanosecond when he's talking of Hardy, the horribly written Ahab scene that he just performed so hard. So on one hand you have Mickey Rourke, and the other hand you have Christopher Plummer, who is
Mickey
disappearing.
Rourke?
Yes.
Got it. Now, Christopher Plummer. Christopher Plummer did the age-old trick of a straight man playing gay. And that's like Oscar gold right there. Jody, what's your thought on the supporting actor performances?
You know, I've not seen, unfortunately, Beginners yet.
Oh.
That being said, everything that I've read and what I've heard from colleagues across the country at other festivals is that Plummer's turned in an incredible performance, and I think he's the runaway favorite to win this. I don't even know that he has competition from what I've read out there. You know, that doesn't mean there's always surprises, but he... You know, he's also certainly in the twilight of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the Oscar will move in that direction as well. So I think he's got everything going for him right now.
All right, Wes, your thoughts.
As much as I would love to, just kind of watch Max von Sydow stand in the corner of a room and kind of scowl at everyone, I'm pretty confident that Christopher Plummer is going to take it home, and it's lucky because he also probably deserves it.
Yeah, fair enough. Will?
I mean, it's pretty much a runaway at this point, Christopher Plummer, but I would like to see Branagh grab one.
Sure.
Because he's a good dude. To put it lightly, I don't know.
Sure.
I'm going to move away from performances and start talking about the films themselves. This is going to be tricky because I want to move into documentaries for just a moment now. We don't live in Los Angeles or New York or some of the areas where they screen all the Oscar films, so it's entirely possible that we haven't seen many, if any, of the documentaries. So I'm going to ask for a volunteer first. Who would like to talk about the documentary features, read the nominees for us.
I can read them.
Okay, Will, go ahead.
I can't say I've seen any of them. But for Best Documentary Feature, Hell and Back. Second is If a Tree Falls, A Story of the Earth Liberation Front. Paradise Lost 3, Purgatory. Pina.
Mm-hmm.
And Undefeated.
Okay.
And Wes, you and I have seen at least two of these, have we not?
Yeah, and this is one of two spots in the whole kind of lineup where I feel very strongly. Obviously, The Artist, first of all, but Hell and Back Again is the best war film I've ever seen, fiction or documentary. It's just a devastating portrait of one particular soldier, both in the war and back on the home front after being injured, and the scenes in which he's sort of spending his time in the drive-through lane at McDonald's say as much about his war experience as the scenes in which he's being followed by the director with his little DSLR camera being shot at. It's a phenomenal film. I hope more people get the opportunity to see it because it's changed how I look at war films, again, both documentary or fiction.
Now, obviously, people don't tune in to the Oscars to see who wins the best documentary feature.
Yeah.
You know, we don't get millions of people watching the show because they want to see a film they've never seen in war. They like seeing the stars. They like seeing the speeches. They like seeing the musical numbers. They like seeing people.
Well, there are
on
documentaries
stage
that transcend that.
That's exactly like the point I was going to get to.
Truth or Bowling for Columbine.
Right.
I mean, certain years mm-hmm. got mm-hmm. a really particularly strong one that's captured a debate in the general public one way or another. I'm not sure that we have that this year. Interestingly enough, The Interrupters just won the Spirit Awards
right.
last night, which we screened at the Virginia Film Festival, and that's not nominated here, which I think is unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. It did that did air on PBS
yeah.
last week, I think it was.
Recent.
So for people who didn't get a chance to see it at the film festival. So that's a good question, Jody, actually. Let me ask you that. If people want to see some of these films that aren't the big theatrical releases, they want to see the documentary features, and they live in Virginia, what are their options?
Well, there's a lot of first of all, Snag Films is one way to go online to Snag Films, and that's one way to be able to see a lot of great documentaries, which is phenomenal. A lot of these films eventually make their way to Netflix if they haven't already, so
mm-hmm.
that's another opportunity.
Pina is actually playing at Vinegar Hill right
yes,
now.
Yes, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
So
I've noticed Netflix does tend to get documentaries pretty quickly.
Yeah. So, HBO, of course, is really cornering the market on a lot of great documentaries. So, you can subscribe to HBO.
Go to the Virginia Film Festival.
You can go to the Virginia Film Festival. Thank you very much.
Thanks for picking up that cue.
Oh,
yeah, there certainly are ways. And Charlottesville, to an extent, I mean, it's a little bit of a limited market. Things tend to get here a little bit late, and
mm-hmm.
there aren't as many screening options as in a larger city, let's say, like Washington, D.C. So, you're 2 hours, 2.5 hours away from that market there.
I think in a lot of ways this category for the Oscars outside of Los Angeles kind of also doubles as like a marketing opportunity, because mm-hmm. like when people watch the whole show generally,
right.
And when it comes to this category, a lot of people probably haven't seen the nominees, but when they see what they're about, the clips, and then what wins, that usually kind of informs them that it could be something they would want to check out later, as opposed to the other categories where it's like, I've seen this is what I think it should do.
But again, you know, not to toot our own horn, but we work hard to try and bring these films in that you're less likely to see, and that's one of the biggest parts of the Virginia Film Festival. Sing Your Song, which was the documentary about Harry Belafonte that we just screened in association with the University of Virginia and the Paramount and the Office of Diversity at the University, where we had Harry Belafonte and Julian Bond talking about that film. I had seen 13 months earlier at the Sundance Film Festival, and I worked very closely with Wes to try and bring it in as part of the Virginia Film Festival. We just missed it, and then we saw an opportunity to bring it in January as part of the Martin Luther King celebration, and we're fortunate enough to be able to have Mr. Belafonte in and Julian Bond and have the film introduced by Rita Dove. So that was an exceptional thing for the community, and we screened it earlier in the day for 900-plus high school students and then nearly 1,100 people at the Paramount that night. So there are opportunities, and that's one of the things that the festival works to do, is bring in a lot of those films that you might not otherwise have that opportunity to see on the screen.
Actually, that's a good point, Jody. I'd like to mention that, because you've done a terrific job of having the film festival not just a yearly occurrence sometime in early November, but to do these kind of events throughout the year. So, if people want to find out what the Virginia Film Festival is doing throughout the year, where should they go visit?
They should go to virginiafilmfestival.org. In fact, that's where you can still purchase tickets tonight for Oscar Night America to benefit the 25th anniversary of the Virginia Film Festival and help us accomplish what we're doing out there and continue to bring great things to our community and our school kids out there. But, you know, we had nearly 40 people walk up last year, so it's not too late to get a ticket. It's a great way to spend the evening, a lot of fun. And year-round, check that website, virginiafilmfestival.org, because there's a lot of stuff going on, and we've got a lot of great plans coming up for our 25th anniversary year.
It's going to be nifty.
All right, Jody, I know you have to, I know that you have to leave us soon. I'm going to talk in just a moment about the other semi-controversial category, and that's original song. But first, I'm going to remind you that support for WNRN comes from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, bringing the Banff Film Festival to Charlottesville on Sunday, March 11th and Monday, March 12th at the Paramount Theater. Proceeds will benefit the Ravana Conservation Society. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road in Charlottesville and at three locations in Richmond. For more store information, it's brms.com. All right. Jody Kulbasa has left the building, so now we can freely talk about him. He's got a radio. Let's move on to the original song, and I'm going to read the list of nominees because it's a long one.
We have time.
Deep breath. Are you ready? Take a breath. Get ready. Here it is, the full list. Man or Muppet from the Muppets. Reel in Reel from Rio. Two songs. Two nominated songs this year. Wes, what does this say about the state of music in film these days?
I'm not sure that it says a bunch. They're sending a real conflicted message by having two to begin with, and neither of those songs are being performed on the Oscars.
That's
right.
Upsetting.
Neither song
right.
is
That's
performed.
Really upsetting. And also, who was the I don't know who wrote Reel in Rio, and honestly, I don't care, but who wrote the music for the Muppets? It was Brett McKenzie of, One Half of Flight of the Conchords.
Right.
And if you haven't seen the Muppets, you're missing out, and if you didn't like the Muppets, you have no soul. But if this one doesn't win, I'm going to eat my own hat.
Why would they not want that to happen on their stage? Why would they not want to welcome a Muppet and a Concord, I suppose?
Let alone a charismatic Muppet like Walter. You know
when Kermit came out, I don't remember how many years ago it was, in the first Muppet movie came out back in the 80s. You guys are all too young to remember. But I watched
77.
The show when he came out and sang It Ain't Easy Being
We're
Green.
Culturally aware, Sean. We're
brought, gold. Brought the house down.
Yeah.
It was just one of the highlights of the Oscar Awards. They still show it during the clip. So I agree with you. What, was Kermit too busy? Did he have, you know, did he have conflicting appointments? Is he, you know, is he on a cocaine bender somewhere?
Yeah, he's
anathema spreading rumors about Kermit.
See how long you can riff on this.
It got a little dark.
I was refraining from the Nine Inch Nails.
I have no idea what this is saying, that they choose only two and they don't feel fit to have time for either of them. I have no idea what that says.
Were there other original songs?
They don't want
9-hour Oscars. I mean, were there any musicals this year? I don't think so.
Well,
I mean,
High School Musical 27, The Revenge.
I don't know. I mean, maybe they're just not producing enough original song material for movies anymore.
Yeah,
that's a good weak excuse for them. I mean, if they can come up with 9 nominees for Best Picture, they can come up with 3 or 4.
I mean, why don't they do what they usually do? Like, they could have nominated like 3 songs from the Muppets,
right? Especially
and had those fight it out.
Especially. Yeah. Considering some of the weak nominees they've had in the past.
And Man or Muppet's a great song, but right. I think the opening tune from that movie was incredible. It was like how they kind of like end capped the whole story with, I can't remember what it's called. It's Everything's Great or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, Life is...
Life's a Happy Song. It, yeah. Life's right. a Happy Song would have been a great nominee for this, but I don't know. It's
All right. Let's move on to screenplays, both adapted screenplays and original screenplays. I'll read the list for you. Adapted screenplays was The Descendants, Hugo, Ides of March, Moneyball, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. And an original screenplay was The Artist, Bridesmaids, Margin Call, Midnight in Paris, and A Separation. Let's move to original screenplay because those are some really good films. And I have a favorite or two in there. But, Corey, I'm going to jump in and now recognizing that you may not have seen them all.
Mm-hmm.
But... what are your thoughts on original screenplays this year?
Well, besides 50-50 and Contagion and all those, but I would have to say, I'm going to take the unpopular opinion and go with Midnight in Paris, I think.
Whoa!
Or maybe it's the popular one. I'm not going to worship the artist.
Yes.
I loved Midnight in Paris.
Yeah.
I thought it was just one of the most delightful experiences I had in the theater this year. And
it only got two nominations, that and art direction this year, is that
right? No, I think it got a director, actually.
And of course, best picture.
Yeah.
And directing. So four nominations.
Yeah, I mean, of the ones available that I saw, I really have to say Midnight in Paris. I thought Woody Allen really, I don't know if he breathed for a moment between his last script and this one instead of just cranking them out aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is a pretty hardworking guy getting a film a year in and writing the scripts for it at his age.
42 films in 42 years,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I think he got the pace right. He got the whimsy of having all these literary characters as characters. And, yeah, I just had a ball with it.
Well, I'm going to step in here. Normally, I play just a moderator, but I'm going to have an opinion on this. I agree. If Midnight in Paris gets nothing else for Best Picture, Best Director, I think there's no question it was the best written story mm-hmm. out there this year and best screenplay. But, Wes, jump in. What are your thoughts?
I think it would be incredibly entertaining to see them take the stage if Bridesmaids won. but I've got to, just for the sake of rooting for it, I'm going to root for A Separation just... because it doesn't seem like a lot of people are. Just because it would be nice.
Really?
Just because it would be nice. I've heard. I'm not saying
things.
I would necessarily prefer it, but
huh.
be a nice feather in the cap.
Okay, all right. You surprised me with that one, Will.
I'm definitely. I would say Midnight in Paris.
Right.
Woody Allen is definitely like he's at the top of his craft as far as screenwriting. He's been doing it for so long,
mm-hmm.
and he's been so kind of under. He's been performing below the bar he set for himself for so long. I think Midnight in Paris is definitely a return to form for him,
mm-hmm.
And I think that's most deserving of it, as far as I can tell.
But, I appreciate that he recognizes that he's too old to play his lead role.
So he just gets Owen Wilson to play.
Well, or he'll kind of Woody split Allen. In half his former persona and give half of it to Owen Wilson as the nice guy and give the kind of
Well, I mean, at his age, you kind of like realize there are different like. Versions of yourself. There are different stages of your career. I mean, he's what, Pushy? He's 70 now? He's 70 something?
Comedy.
What was that, Wes?
I don't want to see 70-year-old Woody Allen star in a romantic comedy, so he's at least smart enough to recognize that about himself.
Well, yes, but if those of you who saw the Woody Allen a documentary that aired on PBS last year, he talks a little bit about that, about trying to separate how people seem unable to separate his persona that he's created, which started out in stand-up, you know, the nervous little nebbishy guy, and translated into film, and he swears he's not really like that. Of course, even as he says that, he sounds exactly like Woody Allen,
right.
the character. All right. Wilson, you have the mic. Let's talk about adapted screenplay.
Adapted screenplay.
Descendants, Hugo, Ides of March, Moneyball, and Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
I would really love to see Tinker, Tailor take it away, because, I mean, that's not an easy novel to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're dealing with, like, spy... When you think spy stuff, you think Bond.
Right.
But this is definitely, like, the anti-Bond. Like, this is what spies really do. It's just very kind of, like, quiet, behind-the-scenes type thing. And I think it was an interesting adaptation of the material, because it wasn't necessarily, like, exact chronologically, but...
I want to talk a little bit about Hugo, because I did not know what that film was about when I went to go see it. It was Thanksgiving Day, or I guess the day after. It was the day after. It was my son's 14th birthday. He and a friend took a friend out to movies. There was nothing on that seemed really appropriate, and I said, well, Hugo, we saw a trailer for it. It looked like a story about a boy and his robot. So we went to go see it. And, I mean, I knew it was Martin Scorsese and marketed as a kid's film. And I don't know why I missed it, but I had no idea going in what it was actually about. For those of you who haven't seen it, it turns into a story about the early days of filmmaking. I was going to say Hollywood, but it's not really Hollywood. It's, it takes place in France. And about sort of a lost director and a lost time, and it really just touched me, and I enjoyed it a whole lot more than I expected to. Corey, did you see Hugo?
Oh yes, I love George Millet, the director.
Right.
I had a similar sentiment about it. It was great. I'm trying to think of. Screenplay-wise, I don't know if I would consider it, because of the last act getting a little wandery.
Yeah, I agree. Well, okay, we'll talk about some of the other screenplays. Descendants, Eyes of March, Moneyball.
I'm in the Tinker Tailor group for basically identical sentiments.
And Wes?
Yeah, I'll third Tinker Tailor. I want to circle back to Hugo, though, because there's some pretty cool stuff to talk about there.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
I mean, again, less about the screenplay aspects, but just going into sort of the broader, maybe skipping into Best Picture now, if you'll grant
sure,
me
that's
that
okay.
opportunity.
Yeah, because it is nominated for Best Picture as well.
It's the fact that no one had sort of had the thought click to, let's take the Lumiere brothers' shot of a train entering a station and make it 3D.
Right.
You know, that's just such a... It's something they would have done. It's something they would have done, and something Georges Méliès would have done. They were... Well, here's the pun. They were tinkerers of the cinema, and they would have had a blast with that. If 3D had existed then, you gotta know that they would have had that train coming at their audience.
Right. And you know, I neglected to add that element. Martin Scorsese doing a kid's film in 3D.
What is that?
I walked in there thinking, this could be awful. At the very least, it'll be entertaining, and not only was it highly entertaining, but very moving.
When you tack 3D onto anything, you're immediately going to think tacky.
Yeah.
And the artists both transcend their gimmick.
Exactly.
You know, artist is more than a contemporary silent film, and Hugo is more than a 3D kids film.
All right. Nobody mentioned Moneyball, which.
That's correct.
Yes. Okay, so we're moving on from Moneyball.
Not into baseball movies.
Yeah, that was the dilemma, though. It was in the theaters forever. I feel bad I didn't see it.
Well, I'm going to take a break for just a moment.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
This week in The Hook, Cracker Barrel Restaurant decides Charlottesville is too much of a college town for them to be successful. What are we going to do without all those sweaters? Even after the jury's recent decision on George Hewley, some folks question the sentence, and The Hook asks why George's dad wasn't in the court for the final day. And UVA President Teresa Sullivan launches the Respect at UVA program, a workplace initiative designed to promote kindness, dignity, and respect. Will it work? The Hook. See you in the movies. All right, this is the Oscar show and WNRN's Wake Up Call. We are talking with Wes Harris, the associate programmer for the Virginia Film Festival, Will Smith, the producer of WNRN's 91 Seconds on Film, and Corey Capron, Man About Town. We were just talking about screenplays. let's move back to actual performances. Let's talk about leading actors. Boy, I am not going to be able to pronounce this guy's name, so Wes, I'm going to have you step in and read the leading actors, please.
All right, we've got Demian Bashir for A Better Life, George Clooney. I assume that was the one you were having trouble with.
Yeah, Clooney. Clooney, Clooney, what is that?
Clooney is what it is. Jean Dujardin in The Artist, Gary Oldman in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, and Brad Pitt in Moneyball.
All right, and since you have the mic, do you have some thoughts on this?
Though I wasn't
the
greatest fan of The Descendants overall, I thought it was well cast and they all acted quite well.
Mm-hmm.
overall, again, I probably do prefer Jean Dujardin just because he had to work harder.
Yeah.
He doesn't get to use his voice, and I think that is deserving of merit. That being said, Damien Bashir, I don't think there's any chance he'll get it, but he did a really good job in A Better Life. I just think I should just I just want to put that out there because we showed that in the film festival this past year, and
right.
we were proud too. He did a great job, but again, Dujardin all the way.
Did you happen to see him on Saturday Night Live a few weeks ago?
No, I didn't.
Dujardin. Who was the Zooey Deschanel was the host.
Oh man!
And they did this black and white clip, which you know it takes place in a cafe in Paris in the 1920s, and they're dancing, and then suddenly Dujardin comes out, and he's just as energetic, and just you can't. I will say this: even with Zooey Deschanel on screen, I couldn't take my eyes off of Jean Dujardin. Yeah. Yeah, it was that good. He's that
he's
good.
He's done a lot of work with his face.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. Yeah. Will.
Yes.
Oh. thoughts on leading actor for this year's Oscar.
It's going to be between Clooney and Dujardin for sure.
Yeah.
But like you said, it is definitely harder to act with your face and not with your voice. Because, I mean, there's so much expression needs to come from that. I think that if he were to win it, that would be a good testament to like the outside, like the parts of acting that people aren't really familiar with. Because everybody can talk, but not everyone can really express with their face.
Not acting.
Like what am I saying right now? I made a face. It's okay. I don't know.
You know, actually, Will, you do have a you
it was
do
a
have
joke
a perfect
we're on
face
radio.
For,
but,
yes, you do have a perfect face for radio.
Ooh, ouch!
Wow, I don't know how to take that one, Sean.
Corey.
Well, I mean, the thing, yeah, I mean, with Jean Dujardin is, try to get that out there, right?
Yes.
But, is, you know, in the same respect that silent actors went out of business when talkies came out, I mean, that's part of the plot of the film.
Right.
Very different art form. And for a talking actor to then adapt back to that art form and get it right, I mean, look at Shadow of the Vampire a while back. Those people were not doing good silent acting. He did. So he's
and,
the one I'm
and
rooting
in
for.
French, no less.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, that's actually reveal about the film is he can't speak. Because, well, yeah, sorry.
Easy.
Okay, fair. Anyway, but I don't think George Clooney should get it because I think he did a wonderful job. But the things that made him stand out were the script.
Right.
He was put in situations that George Clooney's not normally put in, and he played George Clooney in those parts excellently, but as George Clooney. He didn't have to disappear into a role the way Plummer did the other ones. So I think the fan favorite, the one that's been promoted, is Gary Oldman. The one I'm rooting for is Dujardin.
Let's talk a little bit about this, because you brought up Christopher Plummer, who was nominated for Supporting Actor, and Wes, you may have an opinion on this. How do they make that distinction between leading actor and supporting actor? I remember one of my favorite films. Again, this is going back way back, called the Stuntman.
Yeah.
And Peter O'Toole was nominated for Best Actor, and Steve Railsback,
right.
who was in literally every single shot of the film, every single scene. Excuse me.
Sure.
Was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Why? Because people
Peter
said
O'Toole.
Steve Railsback. Who?
Yeah.
So why wasn't Christopher Plummer nominated for leading actor? And you may not have an opinion on that specifically, but what are your thoughts on how they make those
distinctions? I think trying to figure that out is going to be as futile as trying to figure out the original song kind of thing. It's caprice. It's fickleness.
It's politics.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we had a similar situation to this last year when with True Grit, because I mean, the story is told from the girl's perspective. She is literally the character you follow, but she got the supporting role or supporting nomination, and Jeff Bridges got the lead nomination because he's more recognizable.
Really, what it is.
And I mean, that was a big thing. Yeah. Like, why did she? And you're like, well, people know who Jeff Bridges is.
Yeah, but Christopher Plummer. People know who Christopher Plummer is.
Exactly.
He's Dr. Parnassus.
Let me say, though, I'm glad you brought up Stuntman, Sean. I think that's really cool. I have the soundtrack to the film on vinyl framed on my living room wall.
Wow.
So,
awesome.
Nice. Nifty.
Nice. Okay, all right. So you and I are going to have to talk Stuntman sometime. Okay. Leading actress. I will go ahead and read these. Glenn Close, because I can pronounce these names. Glenn Close in Albert Nobbs, Viola Davis in The Help, Rooney Mara in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Meryl Streep in The Iron Lady, and Michelle Williams in My Week with Marilyn. I mean, well, obviously, this is Rooney Mara's to lose. No, I'm sure. Wes, go ahead.
I mean, you've got two kind of institutions, and for that reason, I would kind of prefer not to see Glenn Close or Meryl Streep win, just because they kind of know what that's like.
Mm.
I'm pretty confident Viola Davis has at least a pretty good shot, and I would be fine with that.
Mm-hmm. Again, with the, I mean, she won the SAG Award for it, so if Viola Davis
did, yeah.
Yeah.
And Corey.
As much as I don't like to agree with Roger Ebert, Viola Davis, I think, is going to be the one. I don't think they'll do Glenn Close again because they've got their Transamerica woo-woo already done, and I don't think they're going to do two transvestite transsexuals that close together.
That was like 5 years ago, right?
I know, that close together. They're only so progressive.
I was pretty surprised to see that Rooney Mara got the nomination for that. I mean,
yeah. I think we can attribute that to brilliant marketing.
I wish Charlize Theron had.
She bleached her eyebrows for that.
Bone to throw. Yeah.
Well, there you go. I mean, she bleached her eyebrows. All right, we are listening.
Didn't win me any favors this morning, Sean. I got second chair here. Gee.
You tweezed, not bleached.
Well, okay.
All right, we are listening to the Oscar show on WNRN's Wake Up Call. Support today is coming from the backyard, the UVA's Horner's Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The Backyard has a seasonal menu, daily specials, and a rotating list of beers on tap. The Backyard is now open on Sunday, serving brunch, then a pub food menu until close. For more info, it's 434-202-8215 or thebackyarduva.com or on Facebook. And we are listening to Wes Harris, the associate programmer at the Virginia Film Festival, Will Smith, producer of WNRN's 91 Seconds on Film, and Corey Capron, the best-dressed man in the studio. Corey, I'm going to lob this your way, and let's start moving up into the nominations that people really, really care about. And let's go to costume design. No, I'm kidding. Let's go to directing.
Hey, my wife's a costume designer. Directing. Okay.
Do you want to read the nominees?
Hang on. Actually, my copy.
Directing, The Artist, The Descendants, no. Hugo, Midnight in Paris, and The Tree of Life.
Mine actually didn't list the directors.
Yeah, they didn't actually list the writers or directors. Who is the director for The Artist? You could say it.
Michel Hazanavicius.
That guy.
Excellent.
The Descendants was Alexander Payne. Hugo was Martin Scorsese. Midnight in Paris, Woody Allen, and Tree of Life was Terrence Malick.
Yeah.
Very well done, Will Smith. you've done your homework.
Addiction's going to pay off in Men in Black 3.
All right. Corey, let's go back to you. thoughts on Best Directing.
Best Directing. Well, that was a tough one for me on this one around. I know who I didn't want, which was Tree of Life, which I think was a beautiful film, but it kind of fell apart with some of the character dynamics near the end, and I felt like the cinematographer was the winner, not the director.
Sure. There were character dynamics?
Exactly.
Felt that dinosaur's emotions.
Yeah. So I feel like Hugo might be the winner just because they want to give Martin Scorsese an award
for a film that he
actually did a good job at.
I was going to say something very similar.
Yeah. I mean, he did a wonderful job. He proved he could do a kids' film, and everyone keeps thinking he does mobster films. He's done a lot of different types of films.
Sure.
But I thought he did a fairly good job there. Actually, I would lean towards The Descendants. But Hugo's my favorite.
Interesting. And interesting that, and I know people have discussed this in the past, that not all of the nominees for Best Director made it into the Best Picture list.
Right. It's true.
And it always strikes me as curious. How can you be nominated for the Best Director, but it wasn't the best film? But I guess that's...
Well, the best picture is basically the best producer.
Yeah. Hmm.
I mean, that's the person who takes the award.
He has to get it, yeah.
He's the one
who takes the stage.
Fair enough. Wes, you look like you're chomping at the bit here.
Well, I mean, I would be curious. I agree about Tree of Life. I think it is more about, you know, the DP, the cinematographer. Mm-hmm. I would just be kind of curious as to see who takes the stage for Terrence Malick, because God knows he's not going to show up at the thing tonight, probably. But like, I'm going to beat the artist drum again. I kind of hope Hugo doesn't get it, just because I would prefer to see Scorsese get it for not Hugo.
When was his last Best Director?
His first and only was The Departed.
Yeah.
That I would like to see Scorsese win for something that actually deserves it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love The Departed. Right. I thought it was a great film, sure. But he was definitely winning that Oscar for the catalog of films that didn't win.
Yeah.
I mean, that's for Taxi Driver. That's for Raging Bull. That's for Goodfellas. But I don't know.
I want to see him return to that kind of film and then win for that. Instead of Hugo's.
Let's see the sequel to Goodfellas. Let's see what he's doing in the
Good Ladies.
Bringing Out the Dead was a sequel to Taxi Driver, basically. Sure you want him to go down that road?
I'd forgotten about that film. Thanks for bringing it back.
No problem.
Will, I don't think you've actually... dancing around the edges, but I don't think you've actually jumped in to say your favorite for Best Director.
I'm going to go Scorsese just because I'm a huge fan, and I think this one is what he probably should deserve it for.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Now there are parts of the film, and I'm particularly thinking of the whole sequence with Sacha Baron Cohen, where I'm watching this, thinking, okay, this is well directed for what it is, but what is this doing in the middle of this film? But that's just
being French.
Funny yes. that Sacha Baron Cohen is actually banned from attending the Oscars tonight.
Banned?
That's fine.
Dictator shenanigans. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Hmm. All right. Well, we're working our way up to Best Picture, but I don't want to get there yet. Let's jump around a little bit. Wow. Foreign language films. Wes, you're possibly the only one here who's had an opportunity to see.
Sure. Well, I mean, I've got a route. Well, I'll read them first, I suppose.
Yes.
Bullhead, Footnote in Darkness, Monsieur Leger, and A Separation. I'm going to root for In Darkness simply because we showed it at the film festival last year.
That's a good reason.
And one of the questions you were asking us earlier about the role of film festivals in the Oscar kind of culling process. And a lot of countries have a submission to the foreign film category. There are many more than five that actually make it. And we showed two of those others. We showed Attenberg, which was Greece's entry, and The Turned Horse, which... from Hungary, which, if that were one of these five, I would go for that one without a moment's hesitation.
And Will and Corey are going to ask you if you had a chance to see any of these films? Or
I've been reading a lot about Bullhead, but I don't know much about it beyond that.
I saw 13 Assassins. Okay. No, but actually, I would like to say, though, I guess I am somewhat rooting for A Separation, because politics aside, I'm blown away by some Iranian cinema that I've seen. Yeah. And I'd like to see more.
Let's move down to music. We talked about original song. I note that an original score, they actually have five nominees this year.
Right.
And some pretty good ones. And I'm going to go ahead and read these. The Adventures of Tintin, The Artist, Hugo, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, and War Horse. Now, The Artist, that was mostly, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Wes, you may know this, wasn't that mostly recycled music?
I'm not certain.
Yeah.
I'm not certain.
Yeah, but I know you used a lot of music.
Kind of woven in. I mean, leitmotifs are one thing, but it's not quite kind of copying.
I don't think it would have been nominated if it were recycled, because there have been problems with that in the past.
Right.
I mean, references are one thing.
They can kind of mimic it, but if they outright use it, they can't. Because I remember there was an issue with Johnny Greenwood's score to that movie. The one with Daniel Day-Lewis drinking milkshakes.
There Will Be Blood.
That's the one. I could never remember that. But yeah, there was a...
There's no oil in this movie. It's all about milkshakes.
Yeah. Blood in my milkshake.
Drinking exactly. Bloody milkshakes.
That's from the book Milkshake.
But yeah, he had used some clips from his solo project, which was on a record label and everything, and they couldn't nominate it because of that problem.
Also, I mean, with respect to the silent melodramatic style... I really didn't like that score. I mean, there's you know, stressing melodrama, and then there's beating me over the head. Is he going to, duh, duh, will she make it in time? Duh, duh. And I like scores to create a mood without me knowing it or having a concussion from it.
So, at the top of the list, alphabetically anyway, is The Adventures of Tintin, which, scanning over my list here, I think is the only nomination here. is for original score. You may or may not think that's deserved. But I really like that film. And again,
I thought the film was incredible.
Yeah, and again, I didn't have high expectations. I mean, Spielberg, obviously, you know, he can be good, but then occasionally he does a 1941. Tintin, I grew up reading all the books. I shared them with my son. My son loved all the books. We saw the Canadian produced series. It was, you know, and it was Spielberg given a chance to do Raiders of the Lost Ark with digital animation.
Well, he thoroughly saved the fact that Indiana Jones 4 was horrible.
Okay, we're coming up with the last few seconds of the film. We're going to do just what they do with the Oscars. Best Picture, The Artist, The Descendant, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, The Help, Hugo, Midnight in Paris, Moneyball, Tree of Life, War Horse. We've talked about most of these already, most of the ones we want to talk about anyway. Wes, jump in. Your choice.
The Artist.
Okay. Will?
Hugo.
Excellent. And Corey?
I'm going to go with Midnight in Paris. I thought Hugo and Artist both had technical problems.
Excellent. Gentlemen, thank you very much. The hour has gone by much too quickly. I want to thank you for being here. Wes Harris, Will Smith, Corey Capron. I want to thank Jody Kilbasa, director of the Film Festival, for being here at the top of the show. Come tonight to the Paramount to see Oscar Night America. This is Sean McCord, and stay tuned for Les Temps Perdus.
WNRN. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN. I asked my father.